This is an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holden.
Back in 2014, we had Rocky Lang on the show when he was promoting his book, Growing Up Hollywood, Tales from the Son of a Hollywood Mogul. Well, Rocky, who did grow up as the son of a mega film producer, is mining that territory again. He's the co-author of Letters from Hollywood, Inside the Private World of Classic American Movie Making. Rocky joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Rocky.
Good morning from LA.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again, sir. Always a pleasure to have you on.
I love your program. We met on Confessions of Emergency Room Doctors.
Yes, that was a long time ago.
Which was one of the most fun interviews I've had. And then thank you for always being supportive of my efforts.
Well, thank you for putting out the stuff that you put out. So let's talk about Letters from Hollywood. How did this come to be? Because these are actual letters from Hollywood. I know you co-wrote this with someone else. You can talk a little bit about that. But how did this idea come to be in the first place?
It was quite by accident. I came home to get the mail one day, and there was a letter from the Motion Picture Academy. And I was sort of surprised to get it because although I'm a member of the Directors Guild, I'm not a member of the Academy. And so I opened it up, and it said, "Dear Rocky, you won't remember me, but my name is Howard Prouty, and I used to be an assistant librarian at the American Film Institute when you were a directing fellow." Now, that's going back to 1980. And so he said, "I'm now the acquisitions archivist at the Margaret Herrick Library, which is the library of the Academy." And he says, "I found this letter that would be of interest to you." And I turn the page, and it's a letter from my father, Jennings Lang, and it's dated April 14th, 1939, and he was 24 years old, and he had just moved to Los Angeles with about $100 in his pocket and no job prospects, and he wanted to be an agent. And so he wrote this letter to a very famous literary agent named H.N. Swanson, who represented, you know, Gertrude Stein and F. Scott Fitzgerald and a number of great American 20th century writers, and I have no idea if the letter was ever returned. But what it did mark was the start of his career as a very powerful agent, where he represented Joan Crawford and Humphrey Bogart, and then went on to be a studio chieftain and a producer of 35 movies, including Earthquake and Airport, and Play Misty for Me, and a ton of other films. But the point of it is this letter touched me in such a profound way that I called the archivist, Howard, and I said, "Hey, you know, can I take you to lunch? I can't tell you how important this is to me and my family." And at lunch, he then took me on a tour of the archives at the Academy, which, you know, I have no idea what the accurate numbers are, but I've heard as many as 12 million images and, you know, several million articles, including letters. And on the way home, I called my lit agent, and I told him I want to do a book called Letters from Hollywood and chronicle the film industry from the silent era to email. And he said, "That's a great idea." And like all great ideas, then you have to realize how you're going to do this. And I realized, how the hell am I going to find these letters? I'm not a historian. I'm not an archivist. So I called back Howard, and he recommended a woman named Barbara Hall, who is a 30-year film historian. She's been an archivist at the Academy and others' film libraries. And she knows pretty much everything that you could ever know about the history of Hollywood on every level, and knows, of course, where the archives are. So Barbara and I partnered up to do this book, and the two of us traveled all across the country. It was a 3-year journey, and the result is this book. And not only do we have great letters, you know, Hepburn and Mankiewicz and, you know, Wayne and Tom Hanks and Francis Coppola and Henry Fonda and Jane Fonda, I mean, go on and on and on and on. But it was not only finding those letters, but it was collecting those letters. And so not only do we have to go to these archives, and I looked in estate files and city offices and all sorts of crazy stuff, but I had to get the copyright permission, the permission for the copyright to use the letters in the publication. And what I thought, and which is wrong, is I thought I just needed to get the letter receiver to give me permission to use their letter. But it's the opposite. You have to get the copyright permission from the letter writer. So which meant if I found a letter from, let's say, you know, John Huston or Humphrey Bogart to John Huston.
Right.
And I find that letter in John Huston's file. I have to go search out the Bogart estate and get them to sign off on the letter. And what happened is that most of these letters had never been seen by their family or their estates because they're issued by their parents or grandparents. And so they never saw them. And so their voices, the voices of their loved ones are coming back in these letters. And so for the most part, everybody was really excited. And most of the times were you know, pretty routine in finding them. But there were a lot of letters, a number of letters that I couldn't find. I couldn't find the families of the states. They had either died out or that they were off the grid or that they didn't have any children or their children, grandchildren changed names. And in a number of cases, I had to employ a private investigator to go on a deep search to turn up these people.
Wow.
And that in itself was really, really quite an adventure.
Now,
that's the answer. Sorry for the long response.
In putting this together, as you say, it started off with a letter that was sent to you, which was a kernel of an idea to want to do this. But in doing the research and putting the book together, you actually ended up with another letter that involved your dad.
That's right. I mean, the notorious story, or let us say the infamous story of my father, which actually was the genesis of the Billy Wilder film, The Apartment, was that my father was a young agent at the MCA agency, which, as your listeners may or may not know, ultimately took over Universal, became MCA Universal. But in the 50s, my dad had an affair with a screen siren named Joan Bennett. And Joan was married to a very well-known and respected producer named Walter Wanger, who did, other than Cleopatra and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, a number of great films, Ride and Sell Rock 11 and I Want to Live with Susan Hayward, won the Academy Award. He'd done a lot of great films. And the Wanger marriage was in trouble, and my dad's marriage, before he met my mom, was in trouble. And so they had this affair in this apartment right around the corner from the MCA offices. And one day, my dad and Joan Bennett were returning from a meeting, and Walter Wanger was lying in wait and tried to shoot him in the balls. And that became the story. Jennings Lang was shot in the balls because he was shot and he nearly died, but he wasn't shot in the balls, or I wouldn't be here talking to you. But that's a great Hollywood rumor, and it went on. So to make this long story short, because it is a long story, there is a letter from a screen actor, Gilbert Rowland, who was a silent film star. He transitioned to talkies. And he wrote to the girl, Clara Bow, long after they had an affair and done a number of movies. And so I had to find the family of Gilbert Rowland as a letter writer. And using my private investigator, we found a woman named Jill Rowland, who lived actually very close to me. And she was very insistent on meeting me before signing off the letter. And so I read the letter of her very closely. And I couldn't figure out why she was so insistent on meeting me. So I sent it to my friend David Stinn, who wrote a book called Running Wild, which was about Clara Bow. And I said, could you source the letter and see what's in this letter that she wants to talk to me about? So he called me laughing. He says, well, this is all going back to you, because the CB in the letter is not Clarence, but Clara Bow. It's Constance Bennett. So now follow me. Constance Bennett is Joan Bennett's sister. Constance Bennett was also an actress. Constance Bennett and Gilbert Rowland had two daughters, one named Jill Rowland. So David said, Jill's going to want to know if your father was shot in the balls. I said, that's ridiculous. Why would she want to do that? I didn't believe it because, Jill's in her 80s. And sure enough, we met at a coffee shop. And after a little bit of chit-chat, she asked me if my dad was shot in the balls. and of course, I said to her, I wouldn't be having lunch with you if I shot in the balls. And so it was a very, very funny story. And it circled back. And there are a couple other instances where it circled back as well, but I won't tell you all those on a 10-minute piece. But that's just one of the crazy stories. And one of the other things that's really amazingly emotional about this thing is that I've become friends with some of these kids who are now in their 80s and 90s. I mean, Bela Lugosi Jr. and Sarah Karloff and Joel McRae's grandson, Wyatt. And so we share this fraternity of living in the shadows of greatness. But at the same time, we also saw the dark side of Hollywood. And so the sort of camaraderie we have together is really very special.
Now, this is a book, because I'm a fan of old Hollywood, this is a book that's of interest to me. But when you were putting something like this together, were you concerned that the audience you were trying to reach, or the audience that would be most susceptible to reading these stories, might be an audience that was, for lack of a better term, dying off?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and the key to this book, and it was the same to the key of my children's diabetes book, is that, you can target a niche audience that is pretty robust, except that it doesn't really extend to the general population. So, Laura Takes Charge, which was my diabetes book, sold 40,000 copies out of my garage because there were no real books for children with diabetes at the time. In this book, there's a very rabid and very, excited, TCM crowd. and that if we can attack that crowd efficiently, then we will do well with the book. And because there are so many great names in the book and the letter content is so interesting, that we believe anybody who's interested in history, American history, cinema plays a big part. You know, film reflects culture, culture reflects film. Some of the same issues of morality and censorship, of which was there in the early part of the 20th century, and then then after the motion picture, the code was established. You know, they got Trump down. We're still dealing with Trump today, talking about the evils of Hollywood. So there's a lot of sort of follow through over the centuries, and we're dealing with World War II, and we're dealing with the blacklist, and we're dealing with cultural things that happened that affected the lives of the letter writers and the letter receivers.
Well,
it has more interest than just the movies.
Okay. Well, we have less than a minute here, so I just want to ask you this question. Since it's such a personable thing that you've done here, and as you said, you've become friends with the heirs, the descendants of those that have written some of the letters, what would you think your father would say about this book?
I think I don't know that he would say anything other than, good job, Rock. I think that he would be fascinated by some of the stories in the letters because, there's always a story to some of the great movies. And some of these letters reveal this. And just in a very short, little tiny piece is that, there's a very short letter about the Bond movie. And Harry Saltzman, who was one of the original producers, had just had a meeting with Unitas Artists. And he sent a note to his partner, Albert Broccoli. And in the note, it says, just met with United Artists, and they think we can do much better than Connery. And so, go look at what would have happened to James Bond without Sean Connery. And that's just a little teeny tidbit of, 135 letters in the book, which are incredibly revealing and interesting on many levels.
The book is called Letters from Hollywood, Inside the Private World of Classic American Movie Making. Rocky, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Awesome. Always great to talk to you, and hope to catch up with you on one of the coasts soon.
Rocky Lang, co-author of Letters from Hollywood, Inside the Private World of Classic American Movie Making. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0523, and you'll find links to Rocky's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You've just heard an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. To hear any or all of the full hour-long shows, visit thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com. A presentation of Flying Fish Communications.